In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." For our time this morning, and as my voice holds out, I want us to consider fathers and their children. We're going to look at some general principles, some general guidelines. One thing I want to point out, you can have as many different children as you have. They're going to turn out in a different way, but behavior is predictable. We learn that from Luke 15 and 11, and a certain man had two sons. The story of the man with the prodigal son and the elder son. Two men raised by the same father, but they turned out differently. Now, if you remember back about, back in May, on Mother's Day, I did a lesson on holy women who trusted in God for the women. Last month, I did a sermon on the older and the younger, where the older women have a responsibility to train the younger women. And I encouraged the older women to work with the younger women with that, doing things, showing them, teaching them, doing things together. And that wasn't a one-time assignment, but that's something that should be ongoing all the time. So today, and as I said a couple weeks ago, this would be the Father's Day sermon after I got back from our trip. So we're going to focus on fathers. So I have a question for you. Do you know more about TV fathers or Bible fathers? Who do you know more about? You take a look at this group of men. I imagine most of us could talk for hours, tell stories about Fred McMurray and my three sons, or Andy Griffith and Opie, Tool Time Tim Allen and his sons, Michael Landon, Little House on the Prairie, his children, the Brady Bunch. We could go on and on talking about these fathers. Well, how long could we go on talking about Adam or Noah, Abraham, Lot, Job, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Aaron, David? These are just a few of the fathers, but there are so many lessons to learn from them. Back to our text in Ephesians chapter 6. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So why is it that he says that it may be well with you, and that thou mayest live long on the earth? You go back to the old law. And under the old law, a child that was guilty of smiting or cursing a parent, or that was stubborn or rebellious, or that was a glutton or drunkard, was to be stoned to death. In Exodus chapter 21 and verse 15, "And he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He who kidnaps a man and sells him or is found in his hand shall surely be put to death, and he who curses his father or mother shall surely be put to death." The old law was very strict and specific about the respect that children were to show to their fathers and mothers. Leviticus 20 and 9, "For everyone who curses his father or mother shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother, his blood shall be upon him." And in Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21, "If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son, he will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother will take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city, to the gate of the city. And they shall say to the elders of his city, 'This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He's a glutton and a drunkard.' Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So the law was very strict on this, and it would create what God wanted among the people. He did not want sin to persist or sin to remain, or else it would become acceptable. We learn from Psalms that children are an heritage of the Lord, and that should be considered gifts from God who've been placed in our hands to mold and fashion into worthwhile citizens in His kingdom. You stop and think, when a baby comes into the world, the first thing that comes to my mind is like Play-Doh. You take Play-Doh out of that little can and you can mold it, you can shape it, you can make whatever you want to out of that Play-Doh. Children have been placed in our hands to mold and fashion into worthwhile Christians. So it's our responsibility to train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, this word trained, too many times we think of just someone simply telling someone how to act, but there's a lot more to training than simply telling. Back in Deuteronomy 6:6-7, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up." You take and compare this to the way some people teach their children, and I would say both ways together are good. But if you sit down and you talk to your child about 15 minutes about the Bible, that's one way, and then you get up and go and do something. But when you're with your children through the day and you're sitting around doing something, you're going somewhere, you teach them about God throughout the day. And that is going to be woven into their lives. Instead of saying, okay, we're going to set aside this time now, we're going to talk about God, we're going to forget about Him the rest of the day. That is not going to be the best way to go about teaching a child. Nurture and admonition. Nurture is to train, to chastise, to discipline, to correct, and it is to be done out of love. Sometimes we talk about a nurturing mother, one that does something out of love. Admonition is putting in mind by words, to warn, to correct by discipline, to train, to admonish, teach and admonish. So we have these different words used differently in different places, but when we summarize them, we have nurture and admonition, love and control, love and discipline. Now, it's been a couple months ago and when we were in class and I was talking about the behavior being predictable, and I said, I've got a chart somewhere. I found that chart and I changed it a bit, but this basically shows the different types of fathers, and we can predict what kind of children these fathers are going to have by their nurture and admonition. So the different combinations, love and love, two men that come to mind, Lot and Eli, and we're going to look at these examples. What kind of children did they have? Permissive. Permissive children. There is all love and no control. You look at Jacob. There is control and control. How were his children? They were wild children. You get down to the end, I think he mellowed at the end with Joseph and Benjamin, but Joseph, he thought he had died and was gone, but when he was raising his children, they turned out to be wild children. You have control and love. I don't have anybody listed here. This is going to be more speculation, but compare that to the chart beside, with love and control, and Abraham comes to mind. when there is equal love and equal control, you have children that will willingly obey. You don't have to tell them over and over and over, do this or no, no, no. They will willingly obey. Colossians 3:16 says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord." So we see these words in here, teaching and admonishing. To teach deals with positive truth, to reason. A child will come up and, "Daddy, why is this way? What is this?" You teach them and you deal with truth in a positive way. In comparison to that is admonish. This deals with things that are wrong, a warning. "Johnny, don't touch that stove, it's hot." You admonish them, you warn them. And we need to have balance. Sometimes, again, back to thinking of the breakdown of those different fathers, we all know fathers that have been overbearing. We all know fathers that would not speak a word against their children and how those children have turned out. So it's the responsibility of the father to train his children. Sometimes we leave this to the mothers, and that's not right. It's our responsibility. But in so doing, we've neglected the fact that the passage explicitly gives this command to the father. So many men are willing to just, they have a baby. Okay, wife, you raise it. That's not how God intended it to be. It's his responsibility to do the nurture and admonition. It's his responsibility to show that love. And again, depending on generations, some of the older generations that I know, they had a very hard time showing love. The men had a hard time. They were very strict. And it did not come natural to them. He can do this by reading the Bible and Bible stories, this nurture and admonition to his children, and help them to make application of its truth in various aspects of life. Again, mothers do this, but it is the responsibility of the fathers to do this also. He doesn't merely tell them, but he helps them in preparing their Bible classes. "Okay, Johnny, go to your room and do your lesson." Maybe he'll do it, maybe he won't, maybe he has questions. The father needs to be involved with the child. You think too of, you see these people, these men that have been arrested, these criminals. One of the largest reasons that they end up in trouble, they end up in jail, they end up with the law chasing after them, is because of the lack of a positive influence from their father. We have, as men, as fathers, as grandparents, we have more power than we sometimes give ourselves credit. But back to Ephesians 5:23, the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church. So in addition to being involved in the actual teaching and training, it is his responsibility, and God has given him the authority to see that all such nurturing and admonishing is done properly. People, I don't know when this phrase came out, but it was one of those end phrases years ago, co-parenting. People have been co-parenting from the beginning of time, not like the Bible has said, but the Bible teaches the responsibilities of the mother and the father, and they do that together, because we want to raise children that are going to change the world, not because they invented something, not because they amassed a lot of money, not because they have their name somewhere. We want to raise children that are going to change the world because they are leading a godly life and they are going to lead someone else to Christ. Friends, we do that and we have been a success as a parent. A father has certain rules by to train his children. He enforces those rules. He makes them pray, teaches them who gives us all things. He makes them do their lessons at home that they may know that they have got to work and not be lazy. Do we hold our children accountable for what they are supposed to do? He makes them be selective as to their companionships. The father knows his children may not be able to get out of evil associations. So when someone is in the church, we are blessed to have to know other Christians of the same age or Christians that have children. But their friends aren't going to be limited to just Christians. So what do you do when you're raising kids? Well, if the kids want to get together, they're teenagers, say, well, have them come over to the house, invite everybody over, and they can do something here. You don't have to go to somebody else's house all the time. Have them come over. And as parents, we check out who our friends' friends are, because we do not want them to become so close with someone that has a negative influence that they aren't going to be able to get out of that. He sets certain hours, deadlines, and curfews for the house that they may learn order and punctuality. All of this spills over into the church. So as I think everybody here knows, I have a stepson, and if you would ask him, he would probably say I was too strict on him when he was growing up. But when we went out to his Army graduation at Fort Leonard Wood, and we were at Pizza Hut having lunch, and he said, Dad, you wouldn't believe it. There are guys here, when they tell them to turn out the lights, they don't think they have to turn them out. He appreciated the structure. And friends, if there's no structure, if there's no boundaries, then there's chaos. We have to, again, nurture and admonition. We have to balance the discipline with love. So we set certain hours, deadlines, and curfews for the house that they may learn order and punctuality. So you say, we're having lunch at this time, we're having supper at this time, dinner, whatever you want to call it, and the child's a couple hours late. What do you do? Or they don't show up at all. What do? You just let it slide? Well, if they don't learn that at home, how important are church services or worship services going to be to them? How important is getting to where you belong early important to them? And this, our congregation is to be commended. I mean, people get here early. We visit. I've seen some places where it's like there's just a couple people in the auditorium, and then like 2 minutes till, it's like the bus pulled up and everybody runs in. It's like they're dreading to go there. We want to raise our children so they love to worship God. The father does not ask them if they want to go to Bible class or go to worship, but he makes them go to worship and he goes with them. But if you make them do that, that's going to warp their personality and they aren't going to like you. Well, do you make them go to school? Do you make them go to the doctor? Do you make them go other places? Why would we say that we aren't going to make our children go to Bible class or go to worship? When we take them, that's the kind of nurture and admonition that is meant here. When it's necessary, it must be backed up by wise chastening or punishment for good. Just as, again, everything is interconnected. And a meal is a good thing that teaches children a lot of things about being ready for it, manners there, being on time. With admonition, it's not necessary that a parent should always explain to a child the reasons of what they are doing. But it is important that, as a rule, children should have explained to them the evil of the way they are asked to avoid and the advantages of the way they are asked to follow. I don't recall any specific examples with our children. I know they would ask, well, why, Daddy, why do I have to do this? I can't think of any specific examples with them. But I know at work different times, somebody would say, why do I have to do this? And I would tell them, just do it. Just do it. You don't have to understand what I'm telling you to do. Maybe that'll come later, but sometimes you just tell them, do it. And it is important for them to understand by doing this, you're going to avoid this evil. By doing this, there are advantages that are going to come from not doing this. And they got to understand the why. Why do I have to do this? Why? Again, observe that the text places the responsibilities to do this on the fathers. Go mow the yard. Why? Well, I told you so. The grass needs mowing. If you don't mow it, it's going to be 2 feet tall. And just go mow it. You got to learn some responsibility. You got to learn to be productive in this world. And so many kids, I feel for the generation of kids that are growing up now because they face different temptations than other generations have faced and different lifestyles. And one of the biggest temptations and distractions is that phone or tablet or whatever that they hold on their hands. You want to earn some money and go mowing? No, I'm busy. I asked someone in our neighborhood about a year ago, was looking for some young guy to pay some money to do some chores so we wouldn't have to do them, so he could earn some money. And I said, would you be interested in that? No, I'm into gaming. Kids aren't into working and doing things to be constructive. The wording of this may seem somewhat harsh, but remember the same verse, verse 6 and 4, lets us know that it is to be administered in such a way as to not provoke the children to wrath. It's done with love. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, the love and control. So again, behavior is predictable. Children will do what they see. This is a song. I remember hearing it when I was a teenager. It was probably around before then, but it tells the story. My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking before I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed and said, I'm going to be like him. Yeah, you know I'm going to be like him. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when. But we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and said with a smile, what I really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later. Can I have them, please? And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired. My son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids got the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when. But we'll get together then, Dad. We're going to have a good time then. You see, we teach with words, and our children learn by observing. And they sometimes learn a whole lot more by watching what we do than by us telling them to do something. So again, we have these different quadrants of different love and control. Behavior is predictable. I'm going to be like you, Dad. He'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Well, when we look at some of these fathers that I had on this chart, when we look at Lot and his daughters, in Genesis chapter 19, beginning in verse 30, then Lot went up to Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, and he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old. There is no man on earth to come into us, as is the custom of the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night. The first went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And it happened on the next day, the firstborn said to the younger, indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, and go in and lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. Then they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both of the daughters were with child by their father. So here we have the story. Lot being the nephew of Abraham, that he loved his daughters, and we see love out of control, where there are no controls, no boundaries. They do whatever they want. They have no regard for God. And here they get their father drunk. They commit incest with him so that they will have children to carry on their name. It's sad, but it's predictable. You got to have boundaries. Got to have boundaries. Got to tell them no. Got to say, this is good, this is bad. And you don't wait till you get into the middle of a situation. You got to do it before then. Well, you consider Eli and his sons in 1 Samuel 2:12. Now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. In verse 22 and 23, now Eli was very old, and he heard the things his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with the woman who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So he said to them, Why do you do such a thing? For I fear of your evil dealings with from all the people. Again, another permissive parent that did not teach his sons right and wrong. His sons laid with the women at the tent of the tabernacle. They committed fornication. They committed fornication. 1 Samuel 2:34, now this shall be a sign to you that will come upon your two sons on Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them. We see God reminded them that this is not right. And again, that's why you go back under the old law, and just when children were disrespectful, rebellious, they were stoned to death, and that would send the message to everybody else. Well, consider Jacob and his sons. Discipline without love raised children that were a reproach and a disgrace to their father. I think one of the stories that bears that out is in chapter 34, beginning at verse 1. Now, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom he had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. So they raped her. They raped her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah and the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, get me this young woman as a wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with the livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with him, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. They bring emotion into it. Please give her to him as a wife and make marriage with us. Give us your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us and the land shall be for you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourselves in it. Then Shechem said to the father and her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you say to me, I will give. So this man rapes her. He wants to marry her. He says, let's make peace. Whatever you want to do, he goes on in verse 12, ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me, but give me the young woman as a wife. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor's father and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And they said to him, we cannot do this thing to give you our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition, on this one condition, we will consent to you if you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised. So they said, well, we'll do this on one condition. You have to become circumcised like us. Then we will give our daughters to you. We will take your daughters to us. We will dwell with you and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take your daughter, our daughter, and be gone. So we'll go along with this on one condition. If you don't want to go along with that, then we'll take Dinah and we'll go home. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing, because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of the city and spoke with the men of their city, saying, these men are at peace with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, in the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us, as wives, and we will give them our daughters. They're saying there's plenty of room for both of us. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised, will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us. And all who went out of the gate of a city heeded Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out with the gate of the city. Now it came to pass on the third day that they were in pain, that the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, took Dinah from Shechem's house, went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain, plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys, what was in the city that was in the field, all their wealth, all the little ones and their wives they took captive, and they plundered even all that was done in the houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I will be destroyed, my household and I." But they said, "Should we treat our sister like a harlot?" So here we have Jacob's sons that he did not control avenge their sister that was raped, and the person that wanted to marry her, they told him, "Okay, we'll give you our sister to you, but you got to be circumcised." And then on the third day, when they were in pain after they were circumcised, Simeon and Levi go in and they take everything. They take the sheep, the oxen, the donkeys, what was in the city, what was in the field, all their wealth, the children's wives, servants. They took everything in the houses. They killed all the men. And who was going to stop them? Nobody could stop them because they didn't have any men to fight because they were all in pain. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land." Some translations say, "You've made my name stink among the people." What kind of children would do that? What kind of children would do that? Children that were controlled without love. And then when Jacob calls his sons together, he says, "Let me tell you what befall you in the last days." And he's speaking about how they are. He says, "Reuben, you are my firstborn, unstable as water, because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." So Reuben slept with one of his father's wives. Simeon and Levi, brothers, instruments of cruelty. In their anger, they slew a man, and in their self-will, they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce. Their wrath is cruel. Judah, whom you your brothers praise, your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Issachar, a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. Dan will be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider shall fall backwards. As he is speaking about his children, he doesn't have anything good to say about them. But again, are we surprised? Are we surprised? Not when we know the things are predictable in this love and control. Again, all children are going to be different, but generally speaking, all things are going to be predictable. But then we come to Abraham and Isaac. Genesis 22, and Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey and the lad, and I will go yonder and worship, and we'll come back to you." So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. So this is when, in Genesis 22, when God told Abraham to go worship him, and he told Abraham that he would show him where. And it's interesting that Abraham didn't worship where he wanted to, but where God told him to worship, which there's a lesson in that itself. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." Then he said, "Look, the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for a burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering." So the two of them went together. So did Isaac rebel against his father when they were going on this three-day journey to make this sacrifice? Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there, placed the wood in order. He bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took his knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." So he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, there is a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering for his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, "The Lord will provide," as it is to this day. "In the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." And the Lord will provide, I think that's Jehovah Jireh. But there are different names in the Old Testament for Jehovah. And here, "The Lord will provide." Different fathers: Lot and his daughters, Eli and his sons, Jacob and his sons, Abraham and Isaac. What can we learn from them? We can learn that we need to have equal amounts of love and equal amounts of control. We need to speak of God throughout the day, to put God first. We need to set boundaries. We need to not show favoritism. We need to do what the Lord tells us to do. But friends, we aren't going to know what the Lord tells us to do unless we spend time in His Word. I pray that the children that are here will grow up to be faithful Christians. And you never know. You know, I've heard those stories when I was growing up about this one little girl that married this boy, and then he became a preacher and all the people he baptized. And then it's like, wow, we have that little girl. Our daughter Lee, when she was dating and she told her boyfriend, "You want to be serious, we got to study the Bible." And God's plan works, and we need to learn it, we need to share it, we need to teach it to others. Friends, if there's anyone here this morning that needs prayers, needs to confess sin, needs to respond to the gospel in some way, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.